It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Hello and welcome to the RTC Weekly Download, where we have an hour of great old-time radio for you today. And it involves movie stars. Both of them are guys, and they're both famous. We're going to start off with an English program from somebody I think you remember, Orson Welles. This is a syndicated program called The Adventures of Harry Lime, and it's based on the movie. And this episode is called Blackmail is a Nasty Word. It's from 1952.
Presenting Orson Welles as the Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the story The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
I've messed around in a lot of messy things. You know me, I'm certainly no angel. But I never had anything to do with murder, or dope, or blackmail. Except just once. With blackmail, it is. Not my fault either, as I think you'll agree. But all the same, I'm sorry to have ever come within breathing distance of that caper, because as several people during the course of this little story had occasion to point out, blackmail is a nasty word. That's the title of the tale. Stick around and see if you don't agree. I was running cigarettes into France. In those days, cigarettes and a few other commodities, as I think I've told you before. And I had a nice little sailing boat with an auxiliary, typical pleasure craft of those waters, to use as a cover. This was in September, and I'd just come into port that afternoon. A few of us had been having dinner in the town. I was on my way back to the boat alone. It was late, about 4 a.m, cold, rather foggy. Suddenly, looming ahead of me in the mist, and lurching drunkenly, I saw the figure of a man. Big fellow he was. I thought I'd stay out of his way. Marseille's a tough town, one of the toughest in the world. It's a good place not to have any trouble in, so that's why I tried to keep clear of the drunk. But before I could get out of the way, he caught sight of me, uttered a strange, muffled sort of cry, and suddenly threw himself forward. I braced myself for a fight, but before I knew it, he was down on his knees in front of me, groaning. Then all at once I realized he wasn't drunk at all. That all that wet on his chest was blood. I never found out who did it. Even after I took him onto my yacht and tried to do what I could for him, never told me who it was that had stabbed him. The knife had gone in just over his heart, and by dawn it was pretty clear that he wasn't going to live through the day. He seemed to realize it, too.
They got me. It doesn't matter why, maybe they were right. They got me, and now, very soon, I'm going to die. What is your name?
Lime, Harry Lime.
I've heard of you. You've quite a reputation, Monsieur Lime. I call you Harry.
Okay.
I am Draco. Yes, I see from your face that you have heard of me, too. You call me Marcel.
Okay, Marcel.
That way I spend my last hour or so among friends.
Marcel Bracco. A real Marseillaise. Born quite a while ago anyway. Died September 12, 1947. Profession, crook. All kinds of crook. Some of the dirtiest kinds I knew there. Among other things, I'd heard that Bracco was the chief of the Amazons. It was a gang of girls. Crooks, all of them. The big ugly man in my berth wasn't one of the nice people. And you mustn't think because I'm telling you this story that I've anything to say in his favor. But he was a guy. See what I mean? He was somebody. And he was dying. Steady, old man. Easy does it. I'm with you.
I haven't got time to make a will. I know that sounds like a joke, but I'm serious, Harry. I'd like to leave you something to show my gratitude, something to remember me by.
That's okay, old man.
All I can give you is this. And it's worth something, Harry. It's worth quite a lot. I give you a name. A name, Harry. Do not think I am joking. This name is just as good as money or jewels. Remember it. The name it is Maurice Givolet. Did you hear that, Harry? Givolet. Maurice Givolet.
Well, who is he?
Oh, he's many things, Harry. He's a very many different sorts of man. You must remind him of this. It would be like money to you.
Where do I find him?
In the Chamber of Deputies of the National Assembly of France.
What do I say to him?
I'm dying, Harry. Hold my hand.
I am, old man. I'm holding
you. I haven't time to tell you. You must ask Julien.
Julien?
Yes, Julien Moreau.
Moreau? Moreau. But he was dead. I pulled the sheet up over his big, ugly face and went out of the cabin and locked the door. Three months later in Paris, in a little nightclub in Montparnasse, I ran into Julien Moreau. Julien was a newspaper man, and in his way, Julien was quite a guy, too. Not a crook, just a newspaper man and a good one. I'd struck up an acquaintance with him, and after a couple of weeks, it had brightened into something resembling friendship. So tonight, I thought the time had come when I could afford to approach him on the subject of my legacy. The precious name. Julien.
Yes, Harry?
I want to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
I'm going to mention a name.
Well?
If it means anything, do you let me know?
Don't be so mysterious, Harry. What's the name?
Givolet. Maurice Givolet.
Why do you ask?
Why don't you answer?
Excuse me, Harry. I want you to tell me why you mention that name.
You won't tell me anything about him unless I do?
I'm afraid not.
There was a guy down in Marseille who told me that name. Said it was worth money.
Worth money?
Yes, that's what he told me. He was dying at the time.
That man in Marseille, he must have been a criminal.
Well, don't go all prim and moral on me, Julien. Yes, as a matter of fact, he was something along those lines. What of it?
I'm not going moral on you, Eric. I'm nothing very special myself, but when you say to me that the name Maurice Givolet is worth money, well...
Worth what?
There's a nasty world for that, Harry. A nasty world for that kind of money.
What do you mean?
Chantage.
I don't get that.
That's French, Harry. French for blackmail.
A little later, though, Julien loosened up a little. After a few more drinks.
Harry?
Yes?
That criminal in Marseille you were talking about.
Well, you brought him up, Julien. I was asking about a certain Monsieur Givolet.
I know. Harry, was the criminal's name Bracco? Marcel Bracco?
Yeah, but how do you happen to know him? You're not in the rackets. You're a newspaper man.
Marcel was with us for a while in the resistance. He was a brave man, and we got to be friends. Then later, we quarreled. That was after the war. He came to me here in Paris, wanted information about this Givolet. I gave it to him. Givolet is an important man in the government. And through the paper, I arranged an interview between him and Marcel. But I told you, Harry, blackmail something I can't forgive.
And Marcel was blackmailing the Givolet?
Yes, not for money, but for protection, police protection. Marcel, as you probably know, had that gang they called the Amazons.
But what was he blackmailing Givlet about? What did he have on him?
Plenty.
And you know what it was?
Certainly, Marcel told me.
Exactly what was Givlet's past?
Ah, Harry. That's Mr. Givlet's secret.
And yours, old man. It's yours, too. Hmm?
Yes, Harry, as you say. It's mine, too.
Must be something pretty bad.
Bad enough for a man who's trying to make something decent of himself. Oh, don't think I like Mr. Givlet. I hate him. But as long as he behaves himself, I won't denounce him.
As long as he behaves himself. So that's your price, is it? Don't you see, old man? In a way, you're a blackmailer yourself. Then, some months later, in the lobby of the Georges Sank in Paris.
Calling Mr. Lime, Monsieur Harry Lime.
Yes.
Mr. Lime.
Yes, boy.
Monsieur Lime.
Yes, what is it, a phone call?
There is a lady to see you, Monsieur Lime. She's waiting in the lobby.
A lady, young or old?
Young, Monsieur Lime, and very pretty.
Well, lead the way, old man. What are we waiting for?
You are Harry Lime?
Insist on the original, honey. Accept no substitutes. This is it.
I don't understand.
I'm Harry Lime. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Who are you? We haven't got around to that yet.
You have not given me a chance to tell you.
True enough.
My name is Müller. Heidi Müller.
Glad to know you, Heidi. Shall we go into the bar and have a drink? It's a little early for dinner, but...
This is serious, Mr. Lime. I've come to see you on business.
I was afraid of that. Well, go ahead.
I have been told about you, Mr. Lime.
An idle gossip, honey. You know how people talk. I'm a straight, upright, clean-living, law-abiding citizen. What is it you had in mind?
Well,
Which particular law did you want me to break for you?
I want a passport.
Passport? Oh, that's easy. We can arrange that for you in a couple of days. This man here in Paris does very good work, but the best phony passports come from Amsterdam, if you're willing to wait.
It is not as simple as that.
Oh?
I want a passport for my father.
Well, just give me his name, the other particulars, and a photograph. By the way, what kind of passport do you want? American, British, Panamanian?
No, my father is not here. He's in Romania.
Romania?
Yes. On the other side of the Iron Curtain.
And you want me to get a passport to him in Romania?
That's right.
That's practically impossible.
Mr. Lime.
Well, now, mind you, when I say practically, that's what I mean. It's practically, for Harry Lime, nothing is strictly impossible, just expensive, if you get what I mean.
No, I did not.
Well, how much dough can you spend?
Money?
Yes, money. If you want to get a passport to your father in Romania...
I'm not going to pay anything, Mr. Lime.
What?
You're going to do this for me as a gift.
You've come to the wrong man, Heidi. I'm sorry, I'd like to help, but I never break the law except on a strictly commercial basis. Besides, an operation like
this... Mr. Lime, this is very embarrassing.
It certainly is, dear.
But I told you, you were going to do this for me without charging me money. And you are, Mr. Lime. Shall I tell you why?
Yes, it'd be very interesting to hear.
I believe you are in trouble now with the French police, Mr. Lime.
Honey, I'm always in trouble with the French police. Why?
Yesterday they sent for me and asked me to identify you.
Asked you to identify me? Why? What's the caper?
I do not know. It is something to do with counterfeit money.
Oh, yes, that casino business. That happened in August in Cannes. They never got me on it. The money was passed, all right. They know that, but they can't pin it on me.
I was there in the casino, Mr. Lime. The police discovered that I was next in line at the cashier's. When they found that out, they came to me. They want me to be a witness against you. They want me to swear that I saw you passing that counterfeit money.
I see. And, what did you tell them?
Well, first, I asked them questions about you. That's how I found out that you're, well, who you are.
I see. And, Mukhaidi, tell me the truth. Did you really see me pass that money?
No. As a matter of fact, I didn't, but unless you helped me with my father, Mr. Lime, I'd say that I did. And then, of course, you'd go to jail. Well?
That reminds me of something a friend of mine was saying last night. The French have a nasty word for what you're up to, young lady. I can't remember what it is now. Blackmail's a bad word in any language.
moment, Orson Welles returns as Harry Lime, the third man.
Rodzinski is quite a character and a great authority on passports, frontiers, international laws in general, and how to break them in particular.
Hello?
This is Harry Lime speaking. Harry Lime, I want to speak to Mama.
Ne quitte pas. Hello?
Hello, Mama.
Yes?
It's Harry, Mama.
Are you?
Lime, Mama. Harry Lime. I'm in trouble. I need help.
Bad trouble?
Sort of.
Come up. I see you right away.
An hour later, I'd filled Mama in on the whole story and was waiting for advice.
Well, Ari, it's a tricky business. I don't need to tell you. The phony passport's easy. But finding this man Muller in Romania and then getting him back through the Iron Curtain, it's no joke.
Look, Mama, I didn't come here to listen to how difficult it is. I want some help.
Well, there are two ways.
Yeah?
The first way, you go to Romania yourself.
That's the way I don't like.
I don't blame you. I might can get killed around there. The other way is through diplomatic channels.
Well, the way you say it, it sounds easy, Mama, but... Do you know any ambassadors?
No. I don't know any ambassadors, and neither do you. All you need is somebody high up in the government here in France. If you could just find a weak place somewhere. A weak place where you could put some pressure.
You mean blackmail?
I don't like the word, Harry. No. I mean pressure. Just find the soft place where you can push. Hey, where are you going? Sit down. I'm making a nice glass of tea.
Thanks, Mama, but I haven't got time. I've got to find myself one of those soft places. And then, Mama, I've got to start pushing. Pushing quick, or else.
Or else?
It's that same old word, Mama. I don't like it any more than you do.
Blackmail?
Pressure, Mama, pressure. So long.
Monsieur Lime?
Yes?
Monsieur Gibelet will see you now. Come this way, please.
Thank you.
Monsieur Lime.
Oh, yes. Come in, please. What can I do for you?
Well, I'll get right down to the point, Gibelet. I know you're a busy man as well as an important one.
Well?
I have a favor to ask.
Ah? Huh?
There's a man in Romania. He's stateless. Nansen passport before the war. His daughter's here in France. She wants to get him out.
Are you serious, Monsieur?
Lime.
Such a thing as you are asking. Why, it's practically impossible. And I will be frank with you. I don't even know who you are.
Lime, Harry Lime. I told you that, didn't I?
Well, you see, even on the highest ministerial level...
It would be, as you say, practically impossible. I like that word, practically, Mr. Gibelet. It gives me a little hope.
Yes, but...
I know. Don't bother to say it again. You don't know me from Adam, Monsieur Gibelet, but... There, you see, I have the advantage. I know you from Adam, Monsieur Gibelet. I even know you from Monsieur Gibelet.
I don't understand.
I've been in touch with a friend of yours.
What friend of mine?
A man called Brocco.
What?
Marcel Brocco. The name seems to mean a good deal to you. He said it would.
Brocco is dead.
But not Brocco's secret, not your secret, old man. He gave it to me before he died. Now then, when can I expect some action on my client, Miller?
Your client?
The man who needs a passport. Remember, the case you said was practically impossible.
Leave the particulars with my secretary. You will hear from me before the end of the week.
Thanks, old man. I appreciate this. I really do.
And when do I hear from you? Again, I mean, blackmailers always come back.
That's a nasty word, old man. Don't use it again, and you won't see me. Well, it worked. Whatever it was, it worked. I was holding a secret over a man's head, and I didn't even know the secret. Yes, whatever I was threatening the politician Givolet with seemed to be a threat strong enough, because by the end of next week, Heidi's father was on his way through the Iron Curtain. She said I was wonderful, Heidi did. Asked how she could ever thank me. I told her that thanks didn't come into it. I'm not your benefactor, honey, remember? I told her. I'm your victim. About 4 months later, Julien wrote me from New York. This is Julien Moreau, my newspaper man. Dear Harry, he wrote, now that it's all over, I think you have a right to know the truth. The truth about Givolet, I mean. I'm reading to you now from Julien's letter. Givolet was born in a suburb of Paris. His political life began when he joined a group wearing black boots and brown shirts of a violently anti-democratic character. This was all during the 30s. Then, during World War II, came his big chance. You will see that this Givolet, while essentially a little man, is clever. He secures for himself very early in the German occupation a false identity card, and it is under the false name of Givray that he is a collaborationist, a Nazi stooge, and a black marketeer. His real name is therefore a good name. It is the false one which is bad. Now it's the beginning of 44. Convinced that the Nazis are near the end, he rushes forward to the fighting French and under his real name joins their invasion corps. Under his true identity, he gives them some assistance. And at the end of the war, the power of the resistance becomes overwhelming and their investigations far-reaching, so Givolet drops the false identity of Givray forever. Now notice, please, that his original name is above reproach, since it was under the false one that he acted for the Nazis. Now, there's need for men like himself, modest, self-effacing, industrious. And so it comes to pass that the little fascist street fighter, the black marketeer, the collaborationist, who betrayed scores of his countrymen to the Germans, is triumphantly elected to the Parliament as representative of one of the great historical parties of France. Well, now, my friend, we come to the Amazons. I gave them this title in the newspapers myself just before the war. Theoretically, the racket was broken up, but in fact, it was still flourishing in Paris until the very recent death of a certain Marcel Bracco. This gang worked in pairs late at night, gangs of girls, striking up casual acquaintances with visiting provincial gentlemen of a certain age and steering them to various nightclubs, finally to a cheap bar where the respectable old gentleman was invariably rolled, as you say in America. In other words, everything was taken from him, and if possible, afterwards, he was blackmailed. Now, some such poor old fellow was being beaten up in a bar by Bracco and the others who worked in his gang when Givolet, driving home from an all-night session at the National Assembly, heard the noise. He was waiting for a traffic light to change, and seeing no police on the street, he went into the little bar to investigate. Now, Mark, this was a genuinely kindly act. The act of a self-respecting French citizen. And you see what it got him. Of course, the gangsters turned on him and beat him senseless. Going through his wallet, they came on his old identity card, which he'd kept for some reason or another, concealed behind a photograph of his mother. It was the card of Givray, the Nazi stooge. Thus, his secret fell into the hands of Bracco, who used it not to extort money, but for police protection for his gang. Very recently, as you may have read in my column, Monsieur Givolet was being considered for an important new post in the ministry. And then you, my dear Harry, came to him with your threats. Threats of exposing something, the very nature of which, as it happened, you didn't even understand. Now, Givolet had begun to breathe again, you see, and to hope after Bracco had died. But your visit was too much for him. The French government had put a price on the head of Givray, the Nazi stooge. Givolet, the politician, didn't realize that his secret was safe. Perhaps he was right. A secret like that is never safe. And so it was that after some weeks of waiting for you to return, and of course you never did, his nerve finally cracked. And the very day on which he was to be confirmed in his new post, his housekeeper, coming in with a morning coffee, found him dead. He was seated before his desk where he had shot himself, seated before a blank piece of paper. He had not even written a note of farewell. I suppose at the end he found it difficult to decide who he could write to, what he would say, and above all, what name he would sign.
Harry Lime returns in just a moment.
Days ago, I was in Paris. I went into a little place I know near the markets where they make a wonderful fish soup, and who should I see having lunch there but Heidi. Heidi and an old gentleman I was sure must be her father. It was. She introduced him, and I sat down with him for a drink.
So finally, I get to meet the wonderful Harry Lime. This is really a pleasure.
Well, I'm glad you're with us here, Miller, on the sunny side of that iron curtain.
Thanks to you, Mr. Lime.
Oh, no, really, it wasn't me.
But yes, my daughter has told me everything.
Everything, Heidi? Did you tell your father everything?
Well, Mr. Lime, I told him all the wonderful help...
But did you tell him how you managed to persuade me to do it?
Not exactly.
Not exactly.
What's this? Secrets? Why, Heidi, you're blushing.
Heidi, I'll make a deal with you.
A deal?
I won't tell your father what you did if you let me take you both to lunch.
But that's blackmail.
It's a nasty word, Mr. Miller. Let's not use it again. It'll spoil our soup.
Adventures of Harry Lime, Blackmail is a Nasty Word, from 1952. Now time for our next Hollywood guy, and it's the Saint. And the Saint, of course, was Vincent Price. So this program is called The Corpse Said Ouch, and we're going to find out about that right now.
Adventures of the Saint, starring Vincent Price. The Saint,
based on characters created by Leslie Charteris and known to millions from books, magazines, and motion pictures. The Robin Hood of modern crime now comes transcribed to radio, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price as... The Saint.
I'm not home. It's the middle of the night and I'm asleep. I'm in Schenectady, sitting up with a sick aunt. Oh.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you Simon Templer?
Well, come in and we'll compare Social Security cards.
Thank you. I thought you were in Schenectady.
Never heard of the place.
Sitting up with a sick aunt.
She recovered suddenly.
Simon, I need help. Desperately.
Why?
Because I'm dead.
You're what?
Dead.
Oh, well, of course, some of my best friends...
Simon, my name is Francis Blake. Here, read this.
Read?
That little item down in the corner, under obituaries.
Obituaries? Says here that the body of Francis Blake is at the Restwell Chapel. Burial at noon tomorrow.
You see, the newspapers say that I'm dead.
Yeah, but I don't know whether to believe them or not. You are Francis Blake?
Oh, of course I am.
Come here a moment.
All right.
Thank you. Now...
Simon, what are you...
I beg your pardon.
You pinched me.
Yes?
But...
Well, I had to make sure I wasn't dreaming.
But you're supposed to pinch yourself if you think you're dreaming.
I know, but this way was more fun. Also, I never heard a corpse say ouch before. Therefore, you're not dead.
I already knew that.
I didn't. Now that that's settled, I think perhaps we ought to go visit.
Visit whom?
Your corpse. Taxi! Taxi!
Day or night, rain or bright.
Never mind, Louis.
Oh, Mr. Templer, had I have known it was you, I wouldn't have bothered with the whimsy.
Had I known it was you, I just wouldn't have bothered. However, Francis...
Thank you.
Louis should perhaps be explained. He's a cab driver I try to avoid. I rarely succeed. Which proves to me that my life isn't all that it should be.
Keep it clean. And where at this hour of the night are you going?
The Restwell Chapel.
Get another cab.
Louis.
Okay, okay. Some sport. Takes a girl to see a funeral parlor in the middle of the night.
I'm merely taking her home.
She lives in a funeral parlor?
She's dead in a funeral parlor.
Who's dead?
Miss Blake.
Huh?
Me.
Excuse me, but
Louis,
I got...
don't take
I
your hands off
gonna...
the wheel. I already did.
Yes, so?
She said ouch.
Personally, I would have liked to find out for myself, but if you say so...
I do.
I'll take your word for it. Only how are you going to explain to the funeral parlor her riding around in cabs with you?
Simple. I am apparently the kind of a man a girl wouldn't mind being seen dead with.
Restwell Chapel at your service.
Louis...
I know. Wait. But I'm telling you one thing, considering the type of company you're keeping. I ain't waiting till nobody plays no hot licks and a trumpet.
I don't think you'll have to. Come along, Francis.
All right. I've been trying to pretend to myself that it's all some kind of a joke, but that... funeral parlor looks too real.
Well, we'll find out soon enough. One nice thing about funeral parlors, they're always open.
That you call nice?
She have a point there. Ooh, listen to that doorbell. Chopin, at least.
Ah.
I beg your pardon?
I said, ah.
Ah. Come in, Francis.
This is an hour that comes to all.
Except in states that don't have daylight saving.
I, sir, was referring to your bereavement. Whom are you mourning?
We would like to look at Francis Blake.
The hour is late, but grief knows no clock.
Good heavens, an epigram.
We try, sir. If you'll follow me.
Thank you.
Ah, here we are. And there she is. Beautiful, isn't she?
Very.
Simon, she does look like me.
A little bit, but hardly enough to explain. How did she get here?
Miss Blakeman. The police brought her.
Oh, I see. Who identified her?
Well, that was hardly necessary. Her coat over there in the corner.
Simon!
Wait a minute, Francis. What about her coat?
It had her name on the label. Now I shall withdraw. You will want to be alone with your grief.
All right, but make a sound withdrawing, please. So we'll know you're withdrawn?
Oh, really, sir, it's no use jesting. The dead never laugh.
Well, he's withdrawn.
Simon, that's my coat. It is mine, Simon, but look.
Yes, two holes in the front of it, bullet holes.
Bullet holes?
The girl here, whoever she is, was murdered. Come on, we better get out.
All right, but I'm taking my coat.
I don't think...
It's mine, not hers. It belongs to me, even though she was murdered in it. Simon, what was that girl doing with my coat?
Wearing it when she was shot, presumably.
But...
There's another question, perhaps a more important one. Why was she shot in the first place?
I suppose she had enemies.
Have you?
Back again?
Yeah, we're back again. Francis.
Oh, thank you.
The little lady lost her place?
Francis, where do you live?
The Thornton Towers.
Louis.
I heard.
Simon, back there. Why did you ask if I had any enemies?
The coat's a distinctive one.
Well, it's a very colorful plaid.
Yes, the girl back at the funeral parlor was murdered while wearing it. The question comes to, was her wearing the coat when she was killed merely a coincidence, or was she killed because her murderer thought she was, you?
The Thornton Towers.
Yeah, here you are, Louis, and,
I know. Don't wait, on account of your sitting up with a dead friend.
Good night, Louis.
Good night.
Good night, folks.
Oh, Simon, it's so good to be back home. My apartment's down the corridor. Simon, I feel terrible.
Oh, you needn't.
But what you said in the cab, she was wearing my coat, a very distinctive one, and then she was shot to death. That girl is dead because of me.
No, we don't really know that.
Well, it must be so. Somebody thought she was me and killed her.
That's possible.
But then, that means that somebody wants to kill me.
Is this your door?
Oh, yes.
Of course, it's also possible that someone didn't like the coat and... Hey, did you leave your lights on when you left?
No.
There's a light in the room ahead.
Well, that's the living room.
You stay here in the hall. I'll go ahead and see who it is.
But
I just want to make sure they're neutral on the subject of plaid coats or you. Shh.
Oh. Oh. Hello.
Hello.
Ah, how she was beautiful, your wife.
My what?
Your wife. It's her picture on the desk there, no?
Well, that does seem to be a picture of Frances.
And your name, she is?
My name's Simon.
Ah, it is a name that fills herself with the soul, no?
No.
I knew that tonight, of all nights, you would be lonely.
Believe me, I'm not lonely.
I am here. Oh, your wife, she must have been a wonderful woman.
She,
Your life with her was the magnificent symphony, no?
Chamber music would probably be more accurate if you...
And
were.
Now that she is alas gone, I am here.
Without even a pause for station identification. Look, who are you?
I am Olga.
Simon, who is she?
Olga.
Who is she?
Francis, and now that you two have met...
Waiting a moment, huh? Aha. I look on the picture, I look on the flash...
The what?
The flash, of which I might adding your wife is perhaps carrying a little too much here and there.
especially there.
Now, just a minute.
Mustn't point out her bad manners.
But I am seeing your wife. She's not dead.
She isn't. That is, Frances isn't. If you like, you could try pinching her.
I never pinch, except boys. Oh. Simon, you are disappointing me. Goodbye.
Well, that was quite a performance.
Personally, I didn't care for her cadenza.
Oh, I don't know. It was a nice cadenza, and the tootie was definitely fruity. Mm. That is, Frances, the whole thing was camouflaged.
For what?
Take a look at the room.
The room? Oh!
Yes, it looks as if a junior hurricane had visited it.
You mean somebody of Olga searched the room?
Uh-huh. This one, and, Yeah, the bedroom as well.
But, Simon, what was she looking for?
I don't know. Whatever it was, she didn't find it. Our entrance stopped her search.
Well, I'd better start straightening things up a bit.
Good idea. I'll help you.
Well, shouldn't you be going home?
Oh, I don't think so. You may get some more visitors later on, and rougher ones than Olga.
Why?
Well, maybe they'll tell us if we ask them prettily. In the meanwhile...
Yes, Simon?
We can practice the overture to that symphony Olga mentioned.
Simon.
Yes?
It's getting awfully late.
Yes, I know.
We really can't sit up all night waiting for someone to come. We don't even know for sure that someone will.
Olga got into this apartment, and someone else did before her.
Someone else?
Of course. Your coat was stolen, wasn't it?
Well, I suppose, but not from the apartment, Simon.
Not from... Where was it stolen from?
Well, I can't be sure, of course, but I gave that coat to the cleaning shop down the block about a week ago.
Cleaning shop?
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of it?
The Carter Cleaners. Why?
Because evidently it started out from there to wind up on a murdered girl's body. Therefore, come on.
We're gonna...
Yes, believe it or not, I'm taking you to the cleaners. I thought I told you not to wait.
This is a free country?
Yes,
there's
but...
a parking limit on this here curb, maybe?
No, but...
I waited.
But we're only going down the block a little bit.
You can't afford a quarter?
I like to walk.
What do you get from walking?
Exercise.
Uh-huh, and from exercise, an enlarged heart. From an enlarged heart, you know how many people each year drop dead?
Add them up. We're walking. Come on, Francis.
Simon, you're worried.
Moderately, about all those people with enlarged hearts. This is the place, huh?
Yes.
Front door is shut, but there's a light inside. Let's try. It's locked, however.
I think someone's coming.
Recognize him?
Yes. Yes, that's Mr. Maxson, the manager.
Oh, what do you want?
Do you mind if we come in?
Look, it may have escaped your attention, but it happens to be after 2 o'clock in the morning. Why do you want to come in?
The rain.
It's not raining.
But suppose it starts.
I happen to be a very tired man.
You should go home earlier.
I shouldn't be bothered by drunks.
I'm not drunk. We've stopped by for Miss Blake's coat.
Coat?
The plaid.
As I may have mentioned before, we are not open for business.
And then what are you doing here?
I'm crazy about carbon tetrachloride fumes.
I'd still like the coat.
Oh? Then please do stop by in the morning.
Simon, why did you...
I wanted to find out if the cleaning store knew the plaid coat was gone.
But we didn't find out, did we?
No, nevertheless, we've worried Mr. Maxson. Thank heaven Louis's handy. Hey, Louis! Louis!
You give up, huh?
Yeah. Into the cab, Francis.
All right.
Well, name your destination, Mr. Templer.
A very long trip.
Yeah?
Drive to the back of the cleaning store. You'll probably have to go around the block. That alley must lead there.
Okay.
But, Simon, why are we going to the back of the store? Because we're going in?
No, because I suspect Mr. Maxson is going out.
All
this here is maybe none of my business.
It isn't.
Oh, you know, a remark like that could easily hurt a fellow's feelings.
I'm sorry.
No, it didn't hurt mine.
I'm sorrier still.
But you're not spending this PM in the way a PM should be spent.
Nonsense. So far, it's all been good, clean fun.
That's what I mean.
Simon, Mr. Maxson hasn't come out of the store yet.
No, he may be coy, however.
But why should he have anything to do with anything?
He shouldn't, but it's very possible that...
Simon!
Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Maxson is shutting up shop. Coming down the back alley, which confirms something or other.
You mean if he weren't hiding something, he wouldn't use the back way?
Perhaps. We're far enough away from the alley for him not to notice. Look, he's turning the corner. Louis.
I am alert. Not for nothing was I a Boy Scout. Although, actually, what I was a Boy Scout for was a certain Girl Scout.
Hold it a minute. He's getting into that...
He's a villain. That's a convertible. Everybody knows only villains ride around in convertibles.
He started. Louis.
Here we go.
Hey, look. Maxon's stopping.
Yeah, I better stop right here, huh?
Uh-huh.
Simon, he's going into that nightclub.
Interesting place for a store manager to finish his evening's work. Let's go, Francis.
Leave me know how the floor show is.
I'll be sure to.
Barker's Bandbox. I've heard of the club.
Yeah, and I've heard of Barker. Nothing complimentary either. Well, here it is, and in we go. Dark, crowded, and needs ventilation. The floor show? Emphasis on show.
Simon, Mr. Maxson's over there.
Yeah, ducking out of the door near the piano. Let's follow in his shifty footsteps, huh?
Gee, I hope nobody notices this.
With what's going on, or rather coming off, I don't think so.
It's so dark in this hallway.
Yeah, listen.
I can't hear what they're saying.
We can get a little closer.
Simon.
Now, wait a minute, Barker. I've been waiting long enough. Where are the stones?
I told you, the girl disappeared.
I know what you told me. Don't give me the stones. Now, suppose you tell me where the stones are.
I don't know where they are.
Stones.
Yeah, Barker's got quite a reputation as a crook of various kinds. Stones are jewelry, and unquestionably stolen jewelry.
Having fun, fellas?
Oh!
Hope I didn't frighten you, lady. Coming up behind you, two nosy people like this.
That was her asthma.
Yeah. This here's a rod.
How cute. Could I see it?
Let go.
Simon, I've got his gun.
Yeah, and I've got a fist. Let's see what happens. How gratifying. I hit him and he fell down.
Jake!
Come on. All that could happen to us in here...
Jake!
...would be fatal.
They fired at us.
Yeah, I know. It's always a little nervous-making. Well, here we are.
Thanks, Simon.
No, not yet. I'm going in with you.
But...
No, for safety.
Oh. You think maybe...
I'm just not taking any chances. Well, foyer's all right. Living room. Francis.
What?
Don't look across the room. Olga's back, but this time she's staying.
What do you mean?
I hope you wouldn't see her. She isn't beautiful anymore.
Oh, no. Just dead.
I better phone the police.
Wait, Simon. You know this thing started with Francis Blake being dead.
But it wasn't Francis Blake. It was another girl.
And then someone else got killed. Olga.
Still not Francis Blake.
But Simon, the next time, do you think maybe it will be?
Let's get out of here. Good night, Temple.
Good night, Lieutenant. Thanks for dropping over. And exit Olga, exit police. Francis.
Yes, Simon.
You better go to bed. I'll stay on. It's almost morning anyway.
Oh, well, I couldn't sleep. Would you like me to fix us some breakfast?
Oh, say, that's not a bad idea if you feel up to it.
Oh, I don't know how I feel. You stay right where you are. Won't take me more than a few minutes.
All right.
Okay, that's all the sound you're going to make, sister. The gun's loaded. If you've got ideas about yelling for help, remember this. Bullets get to you quicker than help. Now let's get out of here by the service door like I come in.
But Simon...
Now, the boyfriend, you write him a letter from where you're going. If you're lucky, sister. And I hope you're lucky. You're too pretty to enjoy dying so quick.
Hey, Francis, what are you cooking? Steak? Francis, I don't intend to oversee your cooking, but... Francis!
Oh, here she is, Mr. Barker.
Yeah, nice work, Jake.
Hi. I want to know what this is all about.
Yeah, I bet you do. You and me both, baby. What'd you do with the stones?
The stones?
Yeah. The chorus girl's delight, the old man's charm, the stones.
Oh, you mean jewels. I don't have any.
Maybe not on you, but you're going to tell us where they are, won't you, baby?
Suppose I don't know.
I wouldn't care to believe that.
Well, you'd better start, because I don't know.
All right. I'll start not believing you. Jake.
Yeah?
I don't believe her. I don't think she's behaving right.
You don't, huh?
I don't.
Okay, Mr. Barker.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to slap you around a bit. It's going to hurt you more than it hurts me, too.
Oh, no, you can't.
Want to bet?
Hold it a minute, Jake. I'll get it.
Yeah?
Barker?
Who are you?
Simon Templer. You've got Francis Blake there, haven't you?
It's your phone call.
You must have. Listen, if you don't hurt her in any way, I'll get you the stones you're looking for. She doesn't know where they are.
Matter of fact, where are the stones?
The Carter Cleaner's shop.
Look, don't hand me that. We already been through the joint.
But you didn't know where to look.
Yeah? That could be a deal. Okay. But your girlfriend will be under a gun all the time. First funny move and she gets it.
No funny moves.
We'll be seeing you. Okay, Jake, we're going visiting. Maybe we'll trade in a babe for the stones. If the stones are handed over. If they ain't, we'll just trade her in.
Good morning, and... Oh, you were here last night.
That's right, Mr. Maxson. I was looking for a plaid coat.
Plaid?
Yes, maybe it would be here on this rack.
Oh, it wouldn't be there. You see... This rack is for dresses.
And this is for last night. Sorry to have upset you, Mr. Maxson, but company's coming and I've got to set the table for them.
Joint looks clean. No blue uniforms around. Park it, Jake.
Okay.
Here we go, baby.
I can walk by myself.
Yeah, I know, but I enjoy your company.
Simon!
Hello, Francis.
You Templar?
That's right.
Simon, I...
Hey, stay next to me, sister.
I better just lock the door so we won't be interrupted. All right, where are the stones?
Yeah, they're in the place here. They must be.
I don't like the sound of that. It could be a stall. What's that?
And Mr. Maxson, he fell down while he was pressing some suits or something.
Yeah? Get up, Maxson. Come on.
Hello, Mr. Barker.
Hello, rat.
Oh, you don't have to talk that way, Mr. Barker. I can't help it if the stones were stolen from me, if the woman double-crossed me.
This babe here?
Yeah. Why don't you work her over, Mr. Barker, and her boyfriend? After all, they're the ones who killed Olga, aren't they? It was a narrow apartment.
Never mind Olga. I like the kid. I sent her out the job. She got it. Business, you got to cut your losses when you have to. I still want the stones. Hey, you.
They are here. They have to be.
Then find them.
I've looked, but they're hidden cleverly.
You sound like a guy up a tree, mister, and in just a couple of seconds, I'm going to cut that tree down.
Tree? Hey, wait a minute. Tree? Suppose you wanted to hide a tree so you couldn't find it. Where would you hide it?
I ain't interested in hiding trees.
You'd hide it in a forest, of course. Therefore, going through the place, I noticed... Francis, go through that dress rack.
Dress rack?
Find a dress, any dress, that doesn't seem to belong.
Well, all right.
I don't get it, boss. Who wants to hide a tree?
Get up, Jake.
Maybe it's that simple.
Oh, Simon, I'm not sure what you mean, but this shop is in a pretty expensive neighborhood. All the dresses here are very good ones, except this one. It's quite cheap, covered with cheap rhinestones.
Let me have it. Yes, of course, it doesn't belong here. Why is it here? Because it's a forest.
Looks like a rag to me, not like a forest.
Then suppose you take another look at some of the rhinestones on
it. Let me have it.
Hey. Yeah, most of the things sewn on that dress are cheap rhinestones, but among them...
are the genuine stones, the ones we've been looking for. Well, nice work, Maxon.
I didn't know anything about it. Somebody else must have done it. The frame here...
No kidding.
Wait a minute, Barker. Wait.
For what? I'm going to tell you something, Maxon.
No, Barker, I...
You sure told him.
Never did like a double crosser. Hey, you, where you going?
Well, it occurred to me you mightn't like witnesses either.
Francis, stay behind me.
Hey, what are you...
Pressing machines build up quite a lot of beam pressure.
I kicked the outlet pipe off, and it's aimed at you. You better scram, Barker, unless you want to get parboiled.
Why are you?
Hey, it's getting too hot in here. Come on.
Let's go.
You leaving us?
Oh, they've gone.
Yes, Francis, but not for long. The police won't have much trouble picking them up with them all... forgive me, but I can't resist it. With them all steamed up.
Simon, I'm terribly grateful, but I can't resist...
Francis.
...asking you what it was all about.
Oh, an intellectual, huh? Well, you see, Francis, Maxon and Barker were partners in the jewelry business. Illegitimate.
Oh.
They worked out a nice idea. They'd use very distinctive clothes left with the cleaning shop as disguises for themselves and their confederates.
Oh, and disguises which couldn't be traced because they'd lead back only to perfectly innocent people who had alibis and everything.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the last job they did involved a girl who wore your plaid coat while stealing the jewels.
Oh.
Maxon, however, decided he wanted all the jewels for himself, so he killed the girl and hid the stones.
And Olga?
He had to kill Olga because she suspected something wrong and... came to this apartment because that's where the plaid coat came from.
Mm-hmm. Well, but how did you know that Maxon had killed her?
Back in the shop, he said Olga had been killed in this apartment. How did he know that?
Because he'd killed her. Oh, Simon, what would I have done without you?
The question is, what are you going to do with me?
You've been listening to another transcribed adventure of the Saint, the Robin Hood of modern crime. Now, here is our star, Vincent Price.
Ladies and gentlemen, our cast tonight included Shirley Mitchell, Viola Vaughn, Larry Dobkin, Lou Merrill, Tony Barrett, and Jack Moyles. This is Vincent Price inviting you to join us again next week at the same time for another exciting adventure of the Saint. Good night.
Of the Saint was written by Louis Vitties. The music was composed and conducted by Vaughn Dexter. The Saint, based on characters created by Leslie Charteris, is a James L. Saphir production and is directed by Helen Mack. Vincent Price is soon to be seen co-starring in RKO's production of His Kind of Woman. All you Saint fans will be glad to know that the Saint comic books are on sale at all newsstands. Your announcer is Don Stanley. Programs, get your programs here. Tomorrow night, tune here for Nightbeat. Hear the unusual tales uncovered by reporter Randy Stone as he searches Chicago after dark for human interest stories. Tomorrow night and every Monday night, hear Nightbeat. And then stay tuned for the First Piano Quartet. Next, Sam Spade.
Well, that's all we have time for today. We'll be back next week with more great old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.